I look at juniors, on the other hand, and I would say 80% of the money should go directly into the ground, and that is directly toward the discovery process, whatever methods are being employed, geochemistry, geophysics, drilling in particular, but 80%, no less than that, should be implemented or achieved or conducted for an exploration for junior companies.
Thanks for tuning in, and welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another Mining Stock Education Expert interview. Today's topic of discussion is regarding the process of gold discovery. It's impossible to intelligently speculate in early-stage exploration gold mining stocks without understanding the process by which gold is discovered. So I have on the line with me Dave Mathewson. Dave's a seasoned geologist with 35 years of gold exploration experience in Nevada alone, and he's had several notable gold discoveries under his belt. Currently, he's the head of exploration at U.S. Gold Corp., where they're currently drilling their Keystone project in Nevada and also their Copper King project in Wyoming. Dave, thanks for coming on the program to share your insights.
Yes, I'm looking forward to this interview. Thank you.
Dave, could you give a little more detail regarding your background and success in gold exploration, please?
You bet. Well, my background goes back quite a long way. When I dropped out of college, no less, after my sophomore year, struggling academically and all that, and went to Suriname, to actually get involved, and I was involved with bauxite exploration. And that was in 1964 and 65, so that kind of dates the beginning of my efforts and work as an explorationist. Literally, I was involved with the discovery of bauxite, and that put the fire into my guts. And from then on, I knew exactly what I wanted to do academically. I pursued academics with a vigor and went from rather low to moderate grades to very good grades. At that point, I really knew I wanted to become an exploration geologist. I literally got the fire in my gut to do so. After college, I worked for various companies. I've actually worked for a large number of companies. The longest was Newmont for a period of 12 to 13 years, mostly around and on the Carlin Trend, which was a great place to be working and exploring, and had some success there. And then I took what I would consider to be my exploration prowess outside of the corporation arena into the smaller, more entrepreneurial sectors, particularly junior exploration companies. That would include a couple that I formed myself, Atone Resources, a company called Gold Run, Nevada Gold Holdings, Gold Standard Ventures, and the most recent here is U.S. Gold Corporation.
What specific discoveries, gold discoveries, can you talk a little bit about the ones you've been a part of discovering in Nevada?
I can and will. While I worked for Atlas for 5 years just prior to going to work for Newmont, and Atlas is known for their successes in the Gold Bar region in the Roberts Mountains. That's the central part of north central Nevada, where there's been a number of discoveries. And just to the north of that, actually just the north, is our Keystone project, which actually came about a little bit as a result of my efforts for Atlas back then. That was in the early 1980s, mid-1980s. And, of course, there's Cortez Hills and the emerging Cortez District just to the north of that. I joined Newmont in 1989, actually left them in 1991, but rejoined them in 92 when Bruce Harvey, the exploration manager on the Carlin Trend, put a team together, and he asked me to come on board. My first assignment was in the Rain District, and this was a district that, quote-unquote, had been considered for a long time an over-drilled small deposit district. Well, I began work there in earliest 1992, and I came back to Bruce, talked to Bruce Harvey, and I said that I thought the district was very underexplored in spite of the fact that it had almost 2,000 holes that had been drilled previously. almost all of them by Newmont. There were a couple other companies. Homestake was in a portion of the area, Tech and a couple other companies. But there was a distinct lack of success for a long period of time, as well, basically from the discovery of the Rain deposit itself. And I believe that's about 1985 or 4, something in that vintage. Anyway, I turned the district around, applied geophysics, redid the geology of the entire district, and then proceeded to start drilling holes that were meaningful and were discovery holes. The first deposit that I discovered, and it was in kind of mid to late 92, was a test deposit northwest of the Rain deposit. And then I went back toward the Rain deposit itself, a historic Rain deposit, and found the northwest Rain deposit just off the flank of Rain, and then went back to the west or northwest of that and discovered the Saddle deposit. I also discovered the major extension of the Emigrant deposit south of the known Emigrant Springs deposit at that time. So the bulk of the gold was discovered starting in 1992 through my time there in about 1995. Some of it continued, a little bit of it continued. But
And how many ounces of gold did it total, all the discoveries?
Actually, about, right around 4.5 million ounces total. And there was about 1.5 million known prior to that time. So it went from 1.5 million to 6 million under my guidance. And I'd like to point out one of the, my primary tools of use and application was gravity. Gravity was a new geophysical method, not used so much in exploration, used actually in mining for density determinations and finding voids in rocks and things like that. But I saw the application in exploration and for exploration, applied it very well, and it provided the best guide that I could have possibly imagined to the discoveries of those deposits, in that it provided linear elements which became the major structures and zones of alteration. And to this day, I'm a huge firm believer in the application of gravity, and I use it everywhere in great detail. And I'll have time maybe to say something about our application of it, the method at Keystone.
So when you're sizing up a potential project to determine if it's worth your time, what are some things you look for? And you can use current examples with U.S. Gold Corp. Currently if you'd like.
Well, I'm a huge fan of location. And I, as I put it, like a real estate agent might, location, location, location. There are places in the Earth's crust which are particularly well endowed, and that would include north central Nevada, but that's a big area. That's as big as many of the states, individual states in the United States. So you have to refine down from there, but again, it's location, location, so you look for reasons for these deposits to line up. So, they're referred to sometimes as trends. I tend to line up things a little bit more geologically because trends are always based on the discovery of gold deposits, but that may mean there weren't any gold deposits discovered in certain places, but the geology is right, and so I go after the geology. I think North Central Nevada is, obviously, it's one of the premier places in the world to be exploring for gold, and frankly, I believe that a very large portion of the gold that is in that part of the Earth's crust is yet to be discovered.
And then when you are actually on the ground, you mentioned gravity. What about geochemical, other geophysical methods? What do you prefer, and how do you apply those in Nevada?
Well, yeah, the geophysical methods really depend upon the rocks, what you're wanting to find out about the rocks. Different aspects of the rocks, for example, gravity is good for breaks in density, which could reflect structures. That's a very good thing, an important criteria in gold exploration. And also density changes relating to alteration features. And this really came in big in the Rain District, in my mind, because the detailed gravity would show features which I started to question my mind about. Well, why are these features showing up? And often those features related to alteration changes in the rock, very important. Gold is sometimes related to, for example, dolomization. Dolomite is a high-density element, and so look for zones of higher density that might be reflecting dolomization. And that was one of the key criteria used in RAIN to make some of the discovery there. And I've used it ever since in various fashions. Also, you can destroy density in rock by eliminating or removing some materials, such as carbonate, from a carbonate rock and replacing it with silica. That tends to lower the density, and these features will also show up in gravity data.
How important do you think it is to walk the actual project you're exploring and not just rely on some of this geophysical data or 3D modeling?
Well, absolutely. You have to have a very good sense of what you're looking at and what you're looking for. And I should have elaborated from the previous question a little bit about the geochemistry too. And that really applies to what you're looking at, like in this question. So you're looking at a rock and wondering, well, what's happening in that rock? Well, one of the only ways and best ways to find out what's happening, there are other ways such as petrography, but is through the geochemistry. Elements that come in and are exotic, they don't necessarily belong there. They can be part of a gold system, for example, and the geochemistry, what we've referred to as pathfinder geochemistry, and the big elements there are arsenic, antimony, mercury, zinc, and a few other elements that are often accompany gold, but gold may not be there. But if they're there, that can be a good indicator that gold might be nearby.
When you look at your generation of exploration geologists and you see the newest generation of exploration geologists, can you talk about some of the differences?
I can. I would say the typical older, more experienced geologist is a person and frankly, more capable geologist is a person that has a lot of field experience. I can look at rock and I see subtleties, changes, and things that are different that don't belong there or should belong there and are not there. And that's experience-based, and I think it's extremely important. And I tended to do my best to always learn from those kinds of geologists out there that were successful, and I actually worked a little bit with John Livermore and there were others, Bruce Harvey being another one, and others that were successful. And I paid a lot of attention to the reasons for their success. And a lot of that revolves around looking at the rocks and looking for features in those rocks. I have literally stood on outcrops with other geologists, and I look down at my feet and I say, oh my gosh, this looks great. And all the other geologists, sometimes, this is not always the case, are looking off in the distance, and I don't know what they're contemplating, but I'm looking at the rocks at my feet always, and very carefully and considerately. And I have found that to be the greatest and most valuable tool in gold exploration.
You shared how you were an early adopter of using the gravity method for prospecting, and that new technology helped you with the discoveries. What are some key trends you see now that will help the future of gold exploration?
Well, I think that much of the future of gold exploration revolves around continued application of some of these methods and refinement of those applications. And that is, you learn as you go. And you may have an idea and you apply some geophysics, could be gravity or could be some electrical method, and you apply a drill or put a drill to the test. And then you start to get hints about, well, this is working, that's not working, and so on and so forth. It's a very iterative, thoughtful process of where you go through this process for ultimately to make the discoveries. It's a hard, long-fought, sometimes expensive But it's a great fun and enjoyable process, especially when you end up sticking a hole into something very good.
I listened to a roundtable discussion once of some mining investors and geologists, and the question was asked, what could potentially drive the price of gold down far? And one of the commentators responded, well, if there's new technological development that would cause us to basically see into the earth so we could more accurately pinpoint where the gold is, and then that would bring a great supply to the market. Any comments on that?
My comment would be, we are, in fact, looking down into the earth much better than we have in the past. And this is relates to and as a result of all the tools that are being applied, and probably in particular geology itself, understanding the geology, the nuances, the models of these deposits, very important. And as I put it to everybody that I talk to, it's really the subtleties that matter in this business, and assessment of those subtleties. And some people, I think, are better at it than others. I think, and this is where, and I mentioned it earlier, experience really factors in hugely to this process. When some people can look at rocks and see some very interesting and informative features and characteristics, and they're meaningful. And others will just walk over rocks without hardly looking at them and considering them. And those don't tend to make good explorers, certainly discoverers.
Dave, my next few questions will relate to what the mining investor should look for in a gold exploration company. So the first question is, what are some key drivers of value for exploration companies?
I think if you look at the history and across the board, I think the first thing that investors should look at is the leadership. Who is leading the process? And what's that? What is that person's track record? Now, track records are out there. It's a matter. It's hard to sometimes discern them and evaluate them, or even understand them, or even hear about them sometimes, because often explorers move around a lot. Successful ones tend to move around from company to company. So, but follow those explorers. There's a bunch of them out there. That would be the number one thing to do. And then look at what that explorer is doing. And certainly the track record always. That's a big, big ticket item. But I would say look at how that explorer is approaching things. Is it in a fashion, well, that you think would be successful? Are the right tools being used? And probably first and foremost and most importantly is that geologist drilling holes, because I think there's a lot of companies out there that have properties, maybe good properties, but or maybe not so good, but the drilling is inadequate and lacking. Look at those companies that are drilling. The drill is really the primary means of ultimately making the discovery, but those discoveries have to be led by good quality explorers. High-quality, smart explorers.
When the investor is looking at how a company spends the money that it raises, what percentage of money raised do you think needs to be spent on actual exploration and not just G&A?
That's a very good question, and I have what I think is a pretty good answer to it. When I worked for Newmont, and that would be Bruce Harvey, myself, and a few others, we tried to achieve a 70% money into the ground. Now, that left 30% for G&A and all these other superfluous things. That was our goal, and we came very close. And it was extraordinary because the past was maybe 50%. And then when this team left, it became, once again, a dismal, probably less than 50%. I look at juniors, on the other hand, and I would say 80% of the money should go directly into the ground, and that is directly toward the discovery process, whatever methods are being employed, geochemistry, geophysics, drilling in particular, but 80%, no less than that, should be implemented or achieved are conducted for an exploration for junior companies.
When it comes for the mining investor analyzing company press releases, Let's start with red flags. What are some red flags that the investor should look for when they're reading exploration company press releases?
Well, one thing I would suggest would be not much in the way of new news. I think we all read press releases, and if there's no new news, and that is it's a rehash of something that was previously brought out, and or there's no, let's say, increased or more valuable indicators such as some better grades, some bigger, greater thicknesses in drill holes, higher levels of surface samples, talk about distinct anomalies in geophysics and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of press releases that kind of just rehash some of the same things that have been brought up in the past. They're obviously, the company is probably not going anywhere. What you look for are changes and positive changes, and I would refer to it as almost a vectoring, a mental vectoring process, where you see positive emerging. That's the way discoveries are made. It can be literally overnight that a discovery is made, and it only takes one good drill hole. But usually there's a process involved where some of the drilling gets better, some thicker intercepts, maybe some higher grades kicked into the intervals, and so on and so forth. But watch for that vectoring. As an investor, that's what I would be doing. And, of course, always look at the people that are involved. I would avoid companies that have a high turnover, for one thing. I think that tends to mean that they're floundering a little bit, and I don't want to point fingers at any company out there because we all go through the process of changes. But I would say solid and steady approaches to things and positive results happening on a almost continued basis.
Let's talk about your specific projects that you have, the Copper King project in Wyoming and then the Keystone project in Nevada. Can you let us know what geological theory you're working with there, and what are your goals, and when can we expect results?
Yes, I'll start with Copper King, only because it's kind of, in for two reasons. It's more of a discrete entity. It's had many years of exploration. Many companies have explored the project. But one of the things we did last year was early last year, and this was 2017, was we decided to do some additional geophysics. I know geophysics methods change, they improve, they get better. And what I saw was that there was room for more geophysics coverage on this property. It's about a two-section state of Wyoming-owned area, and of which we're exploring, so of limited size. We applied both ground magnetics and IP in considerable detail, and out of that emerged, well, yes, we got some ground magnetics anomalies, and we knew that gold was somewhat associated with magnetite, which is a reflector, provides a magnetic positive, and IP. We also knew that sulfides, the gold and copper, this is gold and copper and zinc and silver deposit, obviously, that has been known, is associated with sulfides. So what happened was we ended up drilling four holes, and it was hole number one that was on the west flank of the known deposit in an area that had a higher chargeability than the deposit itself, the known deposit, which is approximately a 2 million ounce equivalent deposit if you take gold and combine it with copper. And then there, I mentioned silver and zinc also. But we made a discovery of a continuation. It was about a 200-meter step out to the west of the known Copper King deposit, and had a very nice hole. And that's all reported in our press release and so on. The information's there. We are now following up with an additional program to further expand that discovery. It's significant from the standpoint of what it could contribute to the ultimate size of the Copper King deposit, and I'm going to just say it, guesswork at this point, but it could increase by 50 or more percent in size. The grade will probably stay about the same. The grade was consistent with the historic grades. Now, that we're planning on drilling that beginning approximately the middle of July. So we'll have results early
September.
Mid-August, I'll say we'll probably have some results out. And because it is a follow-up drilling program, we're not going to necessarily wait for every hole. We'll report them as they come in, and we should do that anyway. So that we have that to look forward to. I'm putting the program together as we speak. Keystone, our Nevada project, is really our flagship. That's a project that emerged actually through me. I put it together literally from scratch, although I've had some property positions in that area for a long time. I've known about Keystone and the district for a long time, since my Atlas days in the early 1980s. I always liked it. I didn't have much understanding of it. I never spent a whole lot of time there because there were companies XYZ, BDW, and that were in and out of the area. The property positions were fragmented. All the previous drilling was fairly shallow. There were about 250 holes drilled total historically, and the average depth of those holes was about 250 feet. So there, people were looking for shallow oxide, of which there may be some there, but I think the bigger targets, the better targets, are getting down into the better host rocks, which we are doing, and we have a big, thick package of host rock possibilities, which include Devonian Horse Canyon, Devonian Wenband Formation, and our Wenband really looks good. It's comparable with the Wenband and how it looks in the Cortez and Pipeline area. And then Roberts Mountains below that. And these units, by the way, are all exposed at the surface in some places. It's a structural and geological mess. And I kind of like this, but I do like it, but it's a two-edged sword in that, yes, it's good to have all this complexity, but this complexity makes the job of geology and exploration maybe a little bit more difficult. But having said that, these complexity is one of the key places, or I would say if you see complexity, that's where you want to be in the scheme of things. And we are smack dab on the Cortez zone of the Battle Mountain Eureka trend, and clearly in the same rock, same intrusive ages. We have early tertiary intrusives. We're doing a lot of dating. We'll end up with about 40 dates. Right now we have 10, and all those dates are in the 34 to 36 million year old dates. Perfect. Those are the same dates that exist at Cortez and Pipeline and so on. So we're right on a major trend. In some of the best looking rocks I've seen in an area that's very, very complex. We're just beginning to understand the geology. We have a person that's been now mapping for a little over 2 years and putting together some of the most excruciatingly difficult and complex geology that I've seen anywhere. But again, that tends to lend toward prospectivity very much. We've drilled about a dozen holes, mostly, about half core and half RC. The core holes were drilled largely for information in some in places where we needed information, badly needed it, like what is the stratigraphy? How does it package up? What are the lithologies? What do they look like? And the best way to find that, you get that information, is with core drilling. But now we've shifted to RC drilling a little bit more because now I can look at the rock and say, well, this, I know what this looks like because we have it in core. Our hole spacing is a nominal, say, 1 mile apart at this point. We're just now turning corners with respect to finding and identifying valid and very interesting and compelling targets. In addition to the drilling we've done, we've probably tripled the number of the amount of geochemistry. We have done detailed gravity like gravity has never been done, even by me, even on the Carlin trend. And as we've seen, the more and more detail is giving us more and more features in the rocks, more definition on those features. We're seeing a lot of interesting gravity lows associated or adjacent to gravity highs. This suggests various forms of alteration, and we do have the areas massed to some degree. I'd say about 50% of it is covered with upper plate rock, which tends to obscure targets below, but we're working outward and toward and underneath the upper plate rocks, rock units. This is really an exciting area. I've never seen anything quite like it from the standpoint of the appearances. The geochemistry is outstanding. In a lot of the drill holes, we've encountered visible arsenic minerals, realgar orpiment, arsenopyrite, quite a bit of zinc, which is a common epithermal associate. There's very, very splashy antimony in places, mercury, and gold. We're hitting very spiky and interesting gold. The key is to find out where those feeder structures are. And because we're dealing with such a huge area and in places largely masked by upper plate rock and or other structures, so they could be flat structures, other forms of less permissive stratigraphy and so on, the process is long and drawn out. And I would like to add that one issue that has sort of held us up a bit is the fact that we have not been able to do as much exploration in places that we'd like to do, because that involves reaching out and disturbance. Right now we have 5 NOIs. Each NOI gives us 5 acres of disturbance. That's very, very limited for an area that the whole prospect or project area is 20 square miles laterally. And then vertically we have a big depth factor of 3,000 or so feet of permissive rock. We commenced an EA, that is to give us a plan of operations, almost 2 years ago now, and we're nearing completion. We've been told from BLM and our regulator people, it's Wood that is doing that work, that this will be completed approximately mid-August. But all this process depends upon government approvals and sign-offs and so on and so forth. But that looks pretty good. At that point in time, as far as a date, at that point in time, we will launch into our target-specific drilling programs. We're going to do a little bit of drilling in an area that we acquired late last year in what we call the Potato Canyon area, southwest. We put another NOI, that's 5-acre limitation, to that for disturbance, and we're going to drill 2, 3, 4, depending on number of holes, but we're kind of limited to a small number of holes until this EA is in place. And once we have the EA, then we can disturb, if we wanted to, up to 200 acres, which basically gives us freedom to go anywhere on the property to test any target which we see and have identified anywhere on the project area. And the area is very extensive size-wise. It's remarkable that no company has ever done what we've done. For one thing, we put the entire district together in one package, one single package. We're the only company there right now for the entire district, 20 square miles in size. And this has never been done in the past. And that has allowed us to apply geophysics and geochemistry in a very broad, global fashion, so we can take all that information and then begin the zeroing in process. The discovery process is very much a zeroing in and vectoring process. The vectoring comes through drilling multiple holes and seeing changes and increases in the amount of gold as you go from hole to hole, and that's the direction you want to go, obviously. And that's our intention.
That target, a specific drilling, when can we expect those results, before the end of the year?
We're going to commence that program in a vigorous fashion. And now that we're running, it's going to be a little bit later. We had hoped that we would have the EA done, and the original design was to have it done approximately this spring, but that didn't happen. because of regulatory issues, working with bureaucrats and so on. Anyway, I'm not trying to complain about that. It's a fact of life. Results will come in the fall. At this point, late fall, middle to late fall, probably September, October, more October, when we start reporting out. You know, we may not report out all the earliest holes. It is going to be a vectoring process, so our drilling will depend on drilling we already did and drilling that we're going to be doing. We will follow up both visually and hopefully with positive geochemistry. We'll follow up on holes that we think are promising or at least pointing us in the right direction. But the fact is, we need those holes in order to determine whether which directions to go and how many drill holes it's going to take to complete this process, make a discovery. I'm anticipating, frankly, that we're going to do some very good and get good results by the end of this year, certainly. We'll push the drilling. Last year, we were able to drill, and the year before, we did a little bit of drilling. Again, we were limited because we didn't have an EA and plan of operations in place, but we were able to drill almost to Christmas time. So if we can start in mid-August this year, we'll get a lot of holes in. We'll make some huge advancements in the program.
And for investors wanting to learn more, you can go to usgoldcorp.gold. You can sign up for their email distribution list, and you can get the press releases and the results of the drill program as soon as US Gold Corp releases it. Dave, I really appreciate your insights. This was a very, very thorough, and for the novice mining investor, it was fast-paced. I'd recommend listening to it a couple times. Go read a book on Intro to Mining book and come back and listen to this again, and you'll see that you'll begin to grasp more of what Dave was sharing. Dave, as we conclude, is there any final parting thoughts you'd like to share with the investors that are listening to us?
Well, I guess I appreciate the fact that there are investors out there. I always have. Without the investors, we would have no chance of going anywhere, but it's our job to serve the investors and perform for you folks out there. And I have always done my best and will continue to do the best I possibly can. I take investor monies very seriously. I have a lot of my own into this company. I really believe in what we're doing. I believe the chances of success are very, very good. And thank you for paying attention.
Yes, I'm a shareholder. I've mentioned that on previous programs. And Dave, thank you for speaking with me today.
You're very welcome, Bill. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Mining Stock Education podcast. Please subscribe and share with like-minded investors. Visit us on the web at miningstockeducation.com for more resources on precious metals and natural resource investing. At our website, you can also sign up for our free newsletter for interview transcripts, stock picks, and more. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.